Welcome to another episode of the Inner Man Show. My name is Dylan Eckes. I'm here with my fellow hosts, Shane and Rod. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Doing good.
Yeah, got a Canucks win for the first time in a while, so pretty happy about that.
Oh, that is good news.
Well, the game's not over, but 5-1. If they lose, I'm just done.
and how about you, Rod? How's school?
School's going good. I've got one assignment left. Realized that actually there's two assignments left. Now I got one. I'm going to be starting out my final paper Friday. And I'll finish up my last assignment tomorrow with a group. And that's about it.
Nice, man. Nice. So
you're on the tail end of things.
Oh, yeah. Well, this semester.
Yeah. Take a break and start it over again.
A little break.
Yeah. So we have a guest in the studio today. Again, shout out to Rod for lining up these guests. You know, the last three guests we've had on, the upcoming three guests that we have coming on have been on Rod. So huge shout out to Rod. Thank you so much for lining up these guests.
Amazing job. Yeah, man. Setting everything up. It's fantastic. Thanks, man.
Absolutely. Shane, why don't you do the honors today and introduce our guests?
Yeah. So today we have Colton Dunn of My King Ministries joining us on our podcast today. He has a great story of overcoming adversity, mental health, and doing amazing work in the community. Colton is also a relative of our very own Rod Willier, like Dylan mentioned. Welcome to the show, man. Why don't you start by telling listeners a little bit about yourself and what My King Ministries is.
Sweet. Yeah. I'll start with My King. We're just a nonprofit organization based out of Central Alberta. We started My King only about 8 months ago, actually. Before that, I was doing something called Youth for Christ or Youth Unlimited, and I managed an indoor skate park here in Sylvan Lake, Alberta. And we built a coffee shop next door. And so we had a coffee shop, Timber Coffee, and an indoor skate park. And so I managed the skate park side, and my buddy Dan managed the coffee side. And we did that because already skate parks have this pretty negative view when people are looking from the outside. Most parents are like, oh, I don't know if I want to send my kid to the skate park. So we wanted not to just be a youth drop-in center, but to have generations in the same building. So you got your 50, 60, 70-year-olds coming in for a cup of coffee. They have to walk through the skate park to get to the coffee shop. And so they're rubbing shoulders. So it was just really cool both ways. You had adults interacting with kids and then kids seeing that adults were around. So they act a little different. They're a little better in that way. And so we just saw some really cool things. We tried to feed kids once a week. We fed about 40 kids, ran a program called Life 360. And we were in the high schools and the junior highs. We did things called the wellness room, and we just took some of their toughest kids and hung out with them and just, you know, chill with them. What do you guys want to learn? Oh, I need my license. Well, let's work on that and take kids practice driving in my old Plymouth Acclaim.
That's awesome, man.
Fantastic work you do, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah. And so now we sort of do, we've branched out of the skate park and the coffee shop, and we're doing more community focus, and we call them missional communities. We have groups of people in houses around Sylvan Lake that meet, worship together with the sole focus of to give back to the community, to go out. A lot of people, I don't know where you guys are at with the Bible, but a lot of people read the Bible and then don't do much with it. So we're trying to do what it actually says in it. And it talks a lot about giving to the poor, taking care of the widows, taking care of the orphans. And so My King Ministry, in the 8 months we've existed, we've brought in about 50 grand and we've given around 45,000 of that away back into the community.
That's amazing, awesome, man. Yeah, that's great work. That's, you know, that's God's work. 100%.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, dude. My, our biggest thing, right, is being for the community, right? With the Inner Man Project, we strive to be men that are of service to our community and being of service to our fellow men and being there for each other. Right. So I love that the work that you're doing, man. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So, I was born in High Prairie, and I was actually thinking of this today. The first memories I have of High Prairie is living in my grandma's house, and Rod lived there too.
Yeah.
And
back from BC.
Yeah. Yeah. You were in school doing the whole forensic science thing or whatever that was. I can't remember, but yeah. I was just a young pup at the time. Like, I don't know, maybe 10, 11.
10. Yeah. You played Adams hockey. So you're 10.
Yeah. And so I was just thinking that come upstairs and see Rod back when we both used to be ripped, probably.
That's a fine machine over back there.
Yeah, oh yeah. He's still got it mentally, probably. Yeah. And so I remember Rod being all covered up in tats, and now look at me, his nephew all covered up in tats. So something must have rubbed off on me, but grew up small town, played hockey, played AAA in Grand Prairie once I got older, and then moved to Red Deer grade 11, 12. At first I was living in Grand Prairie, playing AAA, and I was 15, living on my own with some billets, and then lived on my own in a basement suite with another hockey player at 15 years old. Wasn't the best thing. I wouldn't recommend letting any of the, if you have kids, letting your 15 year old move out and live in a basement suite by himself. that's when things really started to happen. When kids find out at school that you're 15 and you live alone, a lot of people start inviting themselves over and and so got in with the wrong crew. And then eventually after a year and a half, moved to Red Deer where my parents had recently moved. And again, in my mind, I had this picture of like, okay, I can restart. I'm in a different city. I'm not going to know anyone. This is a good restart. But right away, again, just jumped in with the wrong crew of dudes and started using and selling drugs. And I had I had a Corvette, had a truck, had a Sea-Doo, had a minivan.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. had all the stuff that went with it and felt like I was someone. And I did that for the next number of years, just living that way. And it was a few events. He went and robbed another drug dealer, got his toes cut off. Then another guy that I finished selling drugs to, 2 minutes later, I walk out of the house, a bunch of guys rush in, stab him in the stomach, take some stuff. And so just sort of had this moment. I was 21, 22, maybe at this time, sitting there going, what am I doing? And that was crazy to me because before that, I was the guy that was like, man, I'm going to be the 40-year-old at the skate park, smoking dope with his kids, hanging out. And that was like the mindset I had. Mm-hmm. And then things started to just unravel. And I had this like distaste in me for sort of what I was doing and was like trying to get my like homies to say like, hey, let's do something else today. And everyone's like, nah, man. So we just did the same old thing. And I started to get tired of that and question some things. And then my older sister invited me to church one day. And I went with the mindset of like, I'm not here for church. I'm just doing my due diligence. I'll sit through this service. And then I'm out to do my own thing. And it was in that service. I only heard like 2 seconds of it. I was sitting there doodling, not paying attention. And then the pastor said something and it struck a chord with me. He said, sometimes God allows the things he hates in order to accomplish what he loves. And so sitting there, I didn't fully understand that, but over time it was like, God sort of showed me, I didn't make you a drug dealer. I didn't make you addicted to drugs. but I can take what is evil and make it good. And that's when it really started. I started a downtown ministry shortly after that, where we fed homeless people. We handed out hot chocolate. And it was just like that idea of like, I can connect with these people because I was the guy selling to these people. And now I'm like, man, I'm changed and I'm sorry for what I did. And so, yeah, that's how it really all started. And then from there, it's just been going with the flow of things.
How old were you when you went into the church with your sister?
I would have been probably, I guess I would have been 22 at that time.
22. What was it? Because like we've talked to when we had Cale Barr on the podcast, I know we've had conversations about our past and whatever else. What was it that struck a chord for you in regards to wanting to switch? Because I mean, I was about 22, 23 when I started making my changes in life. Rod was a little, well, actually you were about the same age, right? 24, 25.
24, 25. Yeah.
Yeah. So you start that early 20s, mid 20s when you're like, I don't, it's either you got to pick two options, right? I'm going to keep going down this path of self-destruction or I need to basically get my crap together. Right. So what was it that like basically struck a nerve for you?
Yeah. Aha moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. The aha moment. Yeah. Like you said there, Dylan, it was that, I better just plug my computer in. Sorry, fellas. It was that moment of like, okay, you're not in high school anymore and you're in the real world. And is this what you want your life to be? And so I was just getting tired of like, is this what my life is? Like sitting in a house all day, getting high, day after day, week after week. And you know, it sounds appealing. It sounds fun to some people that may be listening, but it gets old real quick. Mm-hmm. And so my dad actually invited me to a men's conference, and it was just a bunch of dudes and a guest speaker from, I can't remember, Texas or something. And he was just like rifling at young dudes, like, what are you doing with your life sort of thing. And so that began the change of like, yeah, what am I doing with my life? Mm-hmm. And how do I want to be remembered after I'm gone? And even now, how do I want to be remembered? What do I want to be known for? And it was just awful to see all the people you love start to really dislike you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
is basically someone you felt it believed in you a little bit, and then you just started believing yourself. If that, does that sound right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Then I started to like go to the church, and I would say the young adult pastor at the time, he was a young guy, maybe late 20s, early 30s. And he sort of took me under his wing and got me connected with a different group of guys. And I felt like the outsider. I still felt like, man, what is church? I don't know if I really even like this yet. And these guys, I don't know, like I was the guy that always acted hard, you know, and now I'm hanging out with what feels like a bunch of softies. Mm-hmm. And then as I got to know them, like, actually these guys are pretty rad. And it's like, they didn't need all the stuff that I thought you needed to have fun or enjoy life. Yeah.
It's that camaraderie, right? It's just like, you know, you went from sports to hanging out with drug dealers, which in some aspects, there's almost like a little community when you get into that world. You know, you're buying nice expensive trucks and Sea-Doos, and you're hanging out at the lake, and you're with your boys, and you kind of all do the same thing, and you have a camaraderie together, right? And then, you know, you go to the church, and it's completely opposite of what most people think. When you start hanging out with successful individuals, it's another form of camaraderie. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're very correct. There's this one pastor, he had it was in LA, an ex drug dealer gang member come into his church, and that's exactly what he said. He ended up leaving 4 or 5 months after, and the pastor met up with him and he said, like, why did you leave? What's going on? And he said, I thought when I came to the church, I would find a group of dudes like I did in my gang that phone each other each day, that hang out, that are there for each other. And he just didn't find that group. And so it's sort of sad, but yeah, it was a group of guys that came around me and it was like, all right, these are my dudes.
Yeah, we talk about a lot in the Inner Man and a lot on the podcast and in drop-ins and stuff, surrounding yourself with the right people and, you know, having people that have your back and in your corner. It's just so important. It's so important to have, you know, I'll share, you know, last couple of months I've been struggling, you know, just with work and a few other things. And, you know, I walked into drop-in for the first time in a little bit this last Sunday and I kind of removed myself, you know, whatever it might've been. And, you know, it was uplifting. Like I was welcomed with open arms, a lot of familiar faces, a lot of people that wanted me to win and, you know, hand on the shoulder, like, let's go get out of what you're getting at. Cause that's not you. That's not who you are. It's time to, you know, buck up. Let's get this going.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say it this way. The wolf loves the lone sheep. And so what typically people do is they isolate themselves, they pull away, they pull out a community, you know, they stick to their room and that's when that darkness, the enemy, whatever you want to call it, comes in and finds you. And so that's the same thing, Shane. We always encourage people, you need to get around some healthy people. You need to get around like-minded people, go do some things. And that's and even another level is go serve some people, because in serving people, you actually stop thinking about yourself all the time and are able to pour yourself into people. And that is uplifting and encouraging and can pull you out of the rut you're in.
Totally. One of the things I'll say about myself is I would go through ruts, you know, been diagnosed with anxiety and depression and whatever else. And ADHD. And over the last year and a half or so of being a part of the Inner Man, that definitely has been a huge help for me, as being service to other people, whether it's coming to drop-in groups or, you know, messaging people from our private forum or going to the Legion and going to the Stampede and being out in the community. And then all of a sudden, you know, like you said, not only do you not think about yourself, but you realize like you're in your own head so much, and people across the board have so much more in common, and you start, you know, surrounding yourself with like-minded people. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, actually, you know, whatever I'm dealing with right now isn't so bad, because it isn't so bad. You know, I'm in my own head about it. I'm beating myself up about it. You get stuck in these negative patterns, and then those negative patterns end up leading you to negative people. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it, man. You get like, I think for most men, we're our own worst critics. 100%. And so I think identity is key. And like the world, this is from my opinion, the world tells you what you do determines who you are. Mm-hmm. And so as men, we really take that and we go, oh, I'm an oil field worker. Oh, I'm a hockey player. Oh, I own a motorbike, you know, and that forms our identity after that. But what I see in the Bible is who God says you are determines what you do. So when there's this identity piece of like, there's four ways we typically look at identity, and it's it can come from those dark voices, whatever you want to call them. I call it Satan. It comes from those voices. And if you live from that identity, you usually live a pretty condemned life. You're always getting beat up by something. The second identity we live from is what others think of us. And so again, as guys, we go, man, what does the world think of us? What does our wife think of us? What do this other group of guys think of us? And you start to just, you're either failing or trying to measure up to what people think of you. And then the third one is what we just said. It's how you view yourself. And when you live in that identity, you're usually tallying sums up. Well, I did this good. Oh, I did this bad. And so it's always shifting. And then the fourth identity, I just believe is what does the Lord speak over you? And if you read the Bible, there's a lot of good things. He speaks, you know, he's given you a new nature. And so it says in the Bible that the old man has passed away, and behold, all things become new. says he's given you a new heart. It says he writes his word on your heart. It says he's given you a new mind. It says you have the mind to think like Christ. Yeah, there's just, so that's where I get a lot of my hope and a lot of my identity and a lot of, yeah, just mental health is it comes from him, I would say.
I remember when we were, well, growing up, going back to like when I was living at grandma's and you and Auntie and Courtney and Mackenzie were living downstairs in the basement. I'd go out Saturday nights and party up. Like most Saturday nights, if I was in around, if I wasn't over at my buddy's house, I was out and about having a night on the town.
How old were you at the time?
16, 17 years old, something like that. Yeah, yeah, just a pup, right? Yeah. And then, but my thing was, is I didn't want to bring that type of atmosphere into my grandma's house. One, because it was totally not allowed. And two, I had to be a role model for my little cousins and Colton and his sisters. But I'd go out Saturday night, and I'd say 90% of that time, Sunday morning, I'd wake up and would be get dragged to church if I was there. And the big one, like same thing, right? Like I would sit there, whatever, I'm doing it for grandma, I'm doing it for auntie and uncle, and I'm doing it just to be a role model for my cousins. And then hearing Uncle Peter talk, Colton's dad, and that guy, he could sell a ketchup popsicle to a girl in a white dress. The way he talks, the way he talks, and Colton's got the gift of gab as well, but the way he talks and the way he presents religion and God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit isn't your go to church and this is how it is. It's black and white. Yeah. You got to do it this way. If you don't do it this way, you're going to hell. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a whole different perspective on it. And I could listening to my Uncle Peter talk about religion and listening to Colton when I first heard him speak at a conference. I think you were at a church. Uncle Peter had it on Facebook and he would did a 10-minute speech. I'm pretty sure it was all freestyled as well. You just went right off the top of your head. And that stood out for me the most. And I was like, holy shit. Like my cousin and uncle are damn near two peas in a pod because they both have this gift of just being able to take a subject and run with it, but make it relatable to everybody in the building. It's not just, this is for you guys. You got to do it this way. This or and that's wrong.
Yeah, just cater for a certain crowd.
It was straight across the board. And the same way I felt when I hear them talk is the same way I feel when I go to a powwow. Mm-hmm. It's just that calming. And it's not, it's like how Colton talks, I guess you could correct me if I'm wrong on this one, Colt, is he points out the mistakes that people make. But then at the same time as he's pointing out the mistakes that we've made in our life, he'll pull out a Bible verse that doesn't condemn, but tells you how to recreate yourself in that situation if it happens again. So more or less going, if we went to like ITTM, taking that behavior loop that we do, you know, I feel this way, I'm going to do this. And then why do I keep doing this? Well, excuse me, Colton took a Bible verse and instead of like, so use one that me and Colton can relate to and you guys could do. Let's go and do drugs. Mm-hmm. Well, this is, I don't want to feel that way, but he'll use a Bible verse and it's like, oh, that actually makes sense.
Totally.
Right.
You know, Jordan Peterson talks about the Bible and religion as whether you believe in it or not as a framework for life. Right. And using it as a reference point and using it as an, you know, you want to be a good person. You want to have a sense of belonging. You want to have a sense of purpose. You want to have a higher sense above yourself, right? Mm-hmm. It continuously talks about being of service to your family, being of service to your community, being the best version of yourself possible. And that relates with people. You know, when we sit here and we have this conversation, that's all we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about it in the Christianity and the religious point of view. But what we're saying is across the board, whether it's figuratively or literally, we're looking at what brings a sense of purpose. And, you know, when we sit in our drop-in groups or we've done our personal development program, we did a workshop, Colton, during the summer. It was 16 weeks. We did 8 workshops and then we went on a retreat, heavy physical activity, During the physical activity, you know, during the workouts, the group runs, the hikes, men were literally stopping on the side of the road to start crying because they were just letting out all of their emotions and all of their negativity. And it was a beautiful thing to see. But that's basically what we're talking about, right? Is we're trying to find something that's above us, right? I want to circle back to actually what you said, because I think it's very relatable, because we're in Medicine Hat. We're a small southern town. One of the things that we've actually talked about this is we see the circle of, you know, whether it's ego or whether it's trying to impress others. We see it a lot with guys in construction and oil field here. I know you probably get that in Red Deer a lot too. But it seems to be a younger guy thing too, where you got to buy the nice truck and you got to go out and party every weekend and you got to do this and you got to do that and post it all over Facebook and Instagram. And then what you notice is as you get older, these guys, they either stay on that same path or you start to realize that it really doesn't matter, right? Getting that instant gratification from others, it means nothing to you. It's no justice to who you are as a person. Who you are as a person all depends on how you treat your family and treat your community and treat your own self, your physical self, your mental health, so on and so forth. So yeah, I think it really comes down to, you know, what Jordan Peterson also talks to is that framework, right? That sense of being and the sense of purpose and that higher power.
Yeah, totally. We just, this last weekend had a, sounds similar. We did like a men's retreat. We had 30 dudes meet. We were throwing axes. We put a pumpkin on a zip line. We were whipping axes at it and shooting arrows. And then, but also these real just intimate times in a garage of like, getting together. Where are you at? What's going on in your lives? And same thing, you just see dudes break down and tears come. And yeah, like I said, the world says what you do determines who you are. And so we think as men, we can't cry. We think we have to be tough all the time. And it's really hard to live that way, man. It's like, yeah, there's times where we are tough. There is times that we don't cry. But there also needs to be a grace for men to just share their heart as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the whole purpose of being a man, right? We, you know, the term toxic masculinity, in my opinion, is kind of just like a made up term for guys being dicks, yeah. Really. A man isn't supposed to be that way. They're not supposed to be a toxic individual. They're supposed to be uplifting to their community. They're supposed to be uplifting to their family. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you think of a time, talking to a friend or a family member, someone that's important to you, and you give them the right words at the right time, and you see, you know, the wheels turn and they take it and they apply it. And how that makes you feel as an individual, providing those right words. And all you want to do every time is provide those right words.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to continue to do that over and over and over? Because all that is just sharing love everywhere you go. Mm-hmm. Instead of, you know, guys rib and they do their thing. That's fine. And there is a place for it, obviously, because I mean, we do it, but it's when it's constant and when it's just, it does get taxing. You get around the wrong people and that's all they do. And they think it's funny. And you think, but you know, even those people, they're not happy with themselves. They don't feel good because they don't feel good about themselves. So they don't want to make other people feel good either.
Yeah. Yeah. We use the terms, basement friends and balcony friends. And so we'll ask people, what are you? Are you a basement friend or are you a balcony friend? And so we'll do this little like test. We'll say, get up on the chair, and then we'll get someone to hold their hand and pull them down. And then we'll get them back up on the chair, get their hand again, then tell the person on the chair to pull them up. And we'll say, which one was easier? It's always pulled down. And so we say, what kind of friend are you? Basement friend, where you pull people down to your level? Or are you a balcony friend pulling people up and lifting them up and bringing them up into your level, into, you know, higher thoughts and just it encompasses all of it, right? Right. Your mental health. What are you doing in the community? How are you leading others? And so I like to say too, you should always have one friend that you're encouraging, bring it up, one friend that's around you, and one friend that really encourages you that you're striving to be like?
I'm going to go off a little topic from what I sent you in the email. What do you think that disconnect is? We see that so much in our drop-in groups when guys first come to the inner man, is that they struggle with this concept. They struggle with their ego. They struggle with having a sense of purpose or being a service to their community and their families. What is that? Is it because they get stuck? I mean, we've talked about ITTM and behavioral loops. Is it just because that's the way they're indoctrinated and raised, is to bring other people down because it's easier to bring other people down? And if so, how do we change that narrative?
Yeah, man, I think honestly it is. It's, we grew up in it. It's our culture. I mean, if you follow any sort of TikTok videos or anything like that, what are the videos that get the most likes? It's people bashing other people or doing stupid things. And I just think even back to my days in the locker room with hockey, right? How do guys typically communicate with each other? It's bashing, it's belittling, and it comes across as jokes, and in those moments can sometimes feel funny. But I remember even as a young guy where those things, I would laugh at them and act tough in the dressing room. I'd go home and lay in bed and be like, man, that really sucks. I'm not that tall. So I got made fun of, like a short joke now to me just flies over my head. But back then when I was growing up, man, that crushed me. But I laughed it off and joked it off. And I just think that's our culture. And yeah, I heard this stat once. And so for every negative word that someone speaks over you, it takes three positive words to replace that negative word. So that's a lot of words, right? You get 20 words spoken over you in a day. I'm not good at math. 60. That's, what's that?
60, cuz.
60. Yeah, there you go. That's 60 positive words someone else has to speak over you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, in my perspective, it's like, I don't know, I just feel like in 2021 with the internet and all the information that we have and, you know, podcasts like these, and, you know, there are influencers who are good to follow. There are people out there that are trying to promote a positive message. Yeah. And yet we still see time and time again, guys who come into the drop-in groups and they just don't, it's almost like there's a huge disconnect. They know that they need to surround themselves with positive people. They know they need to have a sense of purpose. They know that they need to be taking care of themselves, but there just seems to be like this brick wall in people's mindset, right?
Yeah. Yeah, again, I think it goes back to just our culture and the way we've painted things over time, you know, like counseling shows that you're weak. Going to a men's group like this, it shows that you have a problem in your life. So now you need something like this. Going to a church is like, it's, there's been all this negativity towards it. And I always say, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, of course, in life, there's always, even in good things, there can be people in it for not the right reasons.
100%.
And that's not the full story, though. Mm-hmm. And so there's these negative connotations attached to a lot of these things that are healthy. And we've grown up in this. We've taken on this mentality that, oh, I'm a man. I can't go to counseling. I can't go to a men's room. I can't go to a church. I can't, whatever it is. And they're all false. So it takes the biggest thing is relationship. Mm-hmm. And so with some of those guys coming into your group, they're fighting under the old mindset of how long in this group, when will someone, you know, start to bash me? When will they not be there for me? And so they're living in this survival mode still. And it takes consistency and relationship to go, oh, these guys actually care for me. They're actually good. They actually do want the best for me.
I know, going back to the mental health thing and having surrounding yourself with the right people. Going back to when grandma passed away at the funeral, I think that was the first time I seen you in 10 years maybe. And you and me went outside and we were talking, kind of caught up on what we were doing and how stupid we were when we were younger, I guess now. And that was kind of a little bit of a wake up that my mental health at that point wasn't even near what it should have been. Mm-hmm. The downfall was I still surrounded myself with those. I think we call them crabs, right? Crabs in a bucket. I'm trying to get up. They're pulling you back down. What crabs do.
Yeah.
And it took me up until, just about 5 years ago. I got away from that toxic relationship. And I think I seen Uncle Peter at my place of work at that time. And I just started dating my wife now. And he came and seen me and he's like, holy cow, Rod, you look different. You look vibrant. You look happy. You look like the 15, 14 year old kid that was living at grandma's house. Like I was happy. I mean, okay, I was partying when I could, right? But I mean, most 15 year old kids did it back then in a small town anyways. But I was genuinely happy again.
Yeah. You're genuine.
Yeah. And it was, it wasn't faking it, right? Like before I'd, you know, most of the men that I've been in contact with, like that are in bad relationships that I've noticed, put the relationship status on Facebook and commend how great the relationship is. And this is always awesome. About
yeah. It. Yeah.
Right. It's constant. Yeah. And I did it all the time. Right. It was just the fake and self-insurance or fake insurance, I guess. Like we're more or less committing fraud to ourselves.
Yeah.
Thinking that we were actually genuinely happy, but it was just a mask that we're putting on to hide the actual truth.
Yeah. Because in reality, no one really cares about your Facebook, Instagram relationship.
Yeah.
No one really, like in reality, like no one's just like, hey, how are you and Melissa doing? No, they're like, hey, how's the kids? Like, how's life? Like, we know that you guys are obviously good. You know what I mean? So it's just like, you're only fooling yourself.
Yeah. And then now like with my relationship now, every once in a while, like the wife will put up pictures of us when we go out for dinners and golf or anniversary pictures or whatever. Right. And
she's your wife now.
Yeah. But we won't put up like I don't put up like there's every once in a while I'll throw up a post about how much I love my wife or how
appreciation
I,
post.
Yeah. Appreciation post. Yeah. That's the terminology. And now it's like when I started my TikTok, I was wanted to do the same thing, right? Like get rid of this guys. You don't have to be fake with this mask on.
Yeah.
Right. Be who you are supposed to be. It doesn't matter if, you know, my last TikTok I just did, I was talking about success. Everyone has a different idea of success. Some people think it's fame. Some people think it's cash. Some people think it's possessions, you know, the newest and coolest stuff. And then other people think success is just being happy, going out and helping people, living like being a truthful life, right? And I think we talked about it in Dropping on Sunday too, how there's some people in the world that are stupid, filthy rich that are some of the most miserable people in the world.
Oh, yeah.
There's also other people that are dirt poor or not on the top end of stuff, but are the happiest people in the world. You couldn't get them mad if you tried.
Yep.
Because they look at everything through a different perspective and they're appreciative of everything that they have. And if they get a little bit more, they're overexcited.
They have that sense of purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I find I'd rather surround myself with those types of people now that are just happy about what they have than trying to get the new best thing or trying to compete with other people. Mm-hmm. The ones that can usually compete with the other people, as soon as they get there, it's almost an addiction. Mm-hmm. Actually, really, because they have, okay, you know what? I want to do this. Mm-hmm. And then this person has this. So I want to get that new truck. Well, I now got that truck. So they release their dopamine. Mm-hmm. And then it's, oh, well, that guy's got a new gaming system. Well, now that's the next thing. And they got to keep going and going and going.
And it compiles with that instant gratification, right? Yeah. And one of the things that we, you know, we've discussed before is that meaning of success. What does that mean? You know, does it mean buying the next new truck? Or does it mean, like, I'll give you a great example. From the time my wife met till now, I went from being a broke entrepreneur to making six figures a year to saying, I'm done with that. I'm going to go to school. Mm-hmm. That's literally what's happened in my life over the last 5 years. And what I can tell you and what I tell people is what we were talking about in Pier that night and Dropping that night was, you know, it doesn't really matter. Like if your quality of life is good and you feel good and you feel like you're doing the right thing, that's the most important.
Yeah.
You can buy all the gifts for your wife in the world. you can, you know, you can buy your kids the most expensive clothes and the new skateboards, and you can do all these things. And it really doesn't matter unless it's doing the right thing. Doing the right thing is spending the extra 15 minutes with my kid before he goes to bed to read a book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doing the right thing is taking the time to have a couple date nights a week with my wife. You know, those are doing the right thing. She doesn't care about a new necklace. She cares whether or not I get to, you know, sit on the couch with her and we just get to chill and eat popcorn. Like, you start realizing that your quality of life is all based on your perception of what you think is going to make you happy, not the reality of what's going to make you happy. For me personally, I turned back to my faith. I grew up in the Catholic system. After I graduated high school, didn't go to church, didn't do any of that stuff. It wasn't until I had the twins 2.5 years ago, my wife had the twins, where I was just like, we went through a really rough pregnancy. She was high risk. Every week we were going to Calgary for another road trip. And, you know, a guy's got to have some sort of purpose in his life to hold on to. And I didn't have anything else to hold on to. And for me, what it was like, oh, I'm making good money. I'm having a great life, but if this goes haywire, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. Yeah. And that for me was just like, oh, it doesn't matter how much money I make. It doesn't matter if we have a boat or a house on the lake. It doesn't, none of that matters. What matters is that I'm healthy, I'm happy, I'm fulfilled. And so is the rest of my family, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The Bible puts it this way. It says, when you lay down your life, you gain it. And it says, when you seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, everything else is added. And so we have this mindset of get, and that'll make me happy, when it's actually give. And then all of a sudden, those things come back to you tenfold, I believe, joy, peace, patience, whatever it is. And I found the exact same thing, man. I spent 4 months in Africa and it blew my mind. I expected like what you see on the commercials, you know, and just this sad place. And when I got there, I'm sure there's parts of Africa that maybe are that. I went to Kenya and I mean, like, I was in the middle of nowhere. I wasn't enjoying the big cities. I went out to this tribe, Pokot tribe, and we were only the second white people to ever be in this tribe. And they had just started wearing clothes. And they haven't even figured that out. There's like, they either wore a top and no bottoms or bottoms and no top. So they were still figuring that part out. But,
you got to wear both, bud.
Yeah. Like a funny story. I was like, I went into a school there and we're like, you know, a bunch of white people show up and we're like, hey, we'll be back tomorrow to help teach your class. And they're like, sweet. They heard that as awesome. I have vacation for the rest of the week. So I showed up and I was like, at first I'm like, oh, I'll take the preschool, like kindergarten age. I get there. There's 60 kids. The teacher doesn't show up. They don't speak a lick of English. So I'm just like, I draw on the chalkboard a one and I'm like, one. And they all go, one. I draw two. I go, two, two. I point back to one. They just look at me blank. I'm like, one. And then I'm like, all right, I'm gonna try something different. I'm like, duck, duck, goose, man, classic kid game. So I bring these 60 kids out, form this circle, and then I just found, man, now I just look like a crazy white dude slapping these kids on the head. In the middle of it, this one kid gets up and just takes a piss right in the middle of the circle and then sits back down. But the crazy thing was, these people had so much joy. They were willing to give. I walked into a hut in the middle of nowhere, and this lady's going, what can I give you? And she goes, all I have is tea. And it's the last of her tea, but she's willing to give it to everyone sitting in her hut to just be there, be community, love on one another, share stories. And so I came back going, man, we, in the Western culture, we think it's about getting so much. And it's really about pouring yourself out and giving and taking those moments, like you said, to read a book, to slow down, to have that moment.
Yeah, the West is doing it wrong.
Yeah. I actually, I had a conversation with somebody up in higher management of an insurance company in Canada recently. And we were talking, basically the company's idea was quotas before anything. If you can write more quotes, you'll write more business. Mm-hmm. And my position was to him, if I can be of service to my existing clients and be the best and do the best of my abilities for my, with the relationships that I already have, they are going to bring clients to me. I don't have to write as many quotes as I can and forget about my clients that already exist. And we had a heavy debate because he was analytical. He wanted more money, this, that, and the other. And what I realized is over my success and over my career as a financial advisor, I started out as that want mentality. And it got me nowhere in terms of fulfillment.
Yeah.
And when I started applying the, I'm going to do the best that I can for the clients that I have and coach them and be of service to them and always answer the phone when they call, that's when my business started to grow. That's what, so you can apply this to any aspect of your life, right? Whether it's, you know, helping out at a soup kitchen, whether it's, you know, volunteering with the Inner Man, or just simply going to your church and hanging out at your church and being of service to your community. For me, when you start taking care of the relationships and the people around you, you start to flourish in life, man.
Yeah. Yeah. What I found is, and this is, yeah, inside the church is, you know, you go back a number of years and people were coming to the church because it was like hell and brimstone. If you don't know Jesus, you're going to hell. And so people started coming for that. And then we went through this generation of knowledge. And it was like, really, we want to know the word and we got to know the Greek word and the Hebrew word and line it all up. And we're coming into a generation now that cares about neither of those, but what they care about is true authenticity, because they haven't seen it over their cell phones. They're not in these groups that go deep together, that care for one another. So what we're finding is people are looking for authenticity. Are you going to be real with me? Are you going to share where you're at? Are you going to care for me? And can I feel trusted and know that I'm loved coming to you no matter what I
look like? Being accepted, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's why people resonate so well with our group and what we do in drop and stuff like that, is because no one's there for any reason other than each other at the end of the day. I mean, obviously we have struggles and we need advice, but you know, when you got people looking on the other side of the room and they're giving you advice and it's just coming out of the goodness of your heart because you want to help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You want to see them on the other side. Like that's why things are so important, is just having that camaraderie, having that community, and just being able to give exactly what you said.
Totally. Yeah. It's huge, man.
Well, it goes back to what we talked about, doing the right thing, right? We've watched over the last year and a half, Shane, guys who have come to us last year, September, October, 2020, struggling, like legitimately struggling, like wanting to take their own life, struggling, where they've turned their whole life around and now they're volunteering with us and they're giving advice to guys who are struggling and being of service to their community, and they're having relationships with their wife again and their kids again. It's a beautiful circle, but it's because the person's doing it for the right reason.
It's very, very rare where we have someone that comes up on the other side of things and doesn't want to help. Mm-hmm. And that, like, that's just a testament of, like, exactly why we started this thing.
Yeah. That's exactly it, man. That's a testimony of, and that's what in my language, that's what we call a movement. Because if people just think they have to keep coming to see me, then I'm probably not doing it right. But if people who are coming to see me get changed and then do what I do to others, that's when you know what's happening is good. It's real. It's authentic. And it's actually making a change.
Yeah. We've always said that, you know, we'd want to get to the point where the Inner Man runs itself. Right. And then that's the beautiful thing about what we do now, is any given night, any three of us could not show up on a Sunday and it would still happen.
100%.
Like, guys awesome. Would come in here and it would be a community of guys helping each other. Right. And that's kind of what we see now, is we're seeing, you know, guys asking us, we have probably one or two guys every week that come to us and say, how can I help? How can I be of service? Whether they're just an average Joe off the street or a professional, right? But it comes down to it comes down to the way I see the church is the exact same way that I see our men's group. It's the exact same way that we, like, we sponsored the Medicine Hat Skateboard Association down here. We've done work with them in the past, and we'll continue to do work with them because they're just a great bunch of people. But what you see when you get into these groups, whether they're young kids or older people in the church, or, you know, just men being at the Interman Project or the women at the Compassion Project, is you see people wanting to help because they realize that they received the help when they were struggling, right? So it creates, now we've created a positive feedback loop, right? Yeah. We've created a behavioral loop that's a good thing, not a bad thing, where we're sitting here going, hey, instant gratification. Hey, what did this guy think of me? Hey, I'm going to buy a nice thing. I want this new truck. And you forget all of that, right?
Yeah, that's really awesome, guys, to hear that. And I think it goes back again to the authenticity, being authentic. And like, we don't operate out of a church building. If we operate out of the houses, we call them missional communities. And we have nothing against the church building. But if you open up the Bible and you didn't know anything about whatever the Western culture is set up, you wouldn't put it in a building. You wouldn't do the things that
happen. Totally. Well, it goes back to what you said about the powwows, right? That spiritual feeling that you felt. Man, I've said this for since I've cracked open the Bible 3 years ago and started reading it again. I don't know if my mother-in-law is going to listen to this, but she pushes the church. And I thought to myself, well, you know, what Christ wants for us is to sit here and have a conversation with us in our living room, or like we're having right now. This is a form of church, you could call it.
It is.
Yeah. So no, I love that, man. I really do. Because even if you take the word God out of the equation, the word Jesus out of the equation, we're talking about spreading good, positive vibes.
Yeah. And so, like, the Bible says to proclaim the gospel, and it is to proclaim that, you know, Jesus came for our sin. And like you were talking about, Rod, like, we live in a broken world and people chase money. They chase success. They chase relationships. Some people even chase religion. And those things may get you so far, but at the end of the day, they all snap back into this broken world that we live in. And the Bible's fancy word for that is called sin. And it's just doing your own thing. And so, again, it goes back to that whole piece of just trying to do for you. And so this is why Jesus came and he died and he lived as a perfect example, someone who cared for other people, someone who took care of the orphan, the widow, fed the poor, helped a brother in need. And so, like you said, yeah, this is church. And that's what we really try to create with these home groups is you're more likely to have a dude walk into your house and sit on your couch and eat a meal with you and chat about this kind of stuff than you are to get him to walk through the doors of a church and sit down. And what we've created, because we're actually in a consumer culture now. And so what we've created is really hard for just any Joe Blow like us to do. Because what it's saying is, oh, I have to stand on the stage and speak if I want to make influence, instead of saying, I can just have people over to my house. Mm-hmm. I can just share. I can just love on people and make influence. And so we've created this consumer culture where the same way you sell Starbucks or something at Canadian Tire is the same way you sell Jesus to people. And if you have half a brain, people catch on to that real quick because it's not authentic. It's not real. What are you trying to get me to do? But when it's a conversation, when it's, I can hear you and can you hear me? And that's the biggest thing I think in our culture right now is we've taken away conversation.
So that's why podcasts are so successful.
Exactly. And so when you take away conversation, races hate each other. When you take away conversation, countries go to war. When you take away conversation, marriages fall apart, friendships fall apart, conversation is key, but it's about being able to go, I can love you at the end, even though you may disagree with me, but can we have this conversation? Can we love each other?
You can see the biggest, big divide right now. Everyone back in the 60s thought it was interracial relationships. It was like going to be the end all of everything. Mm-hmm. Moving forward a couple of decades, you got the 90s where it was homosexuality was going to ruin everyone and we're going to all be condemned. And now look at now. It's not religious based. It's not race based. It's you don't got the vaccine. You're an idiot. Mm-hmm. Well, you got a vaccine. Well, you're a sheep. Like there's that is one of the biggest divides I've seen in my 39 years of life than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it goes right back to, don't talk to me about it. If you're unvaccinated, don't talk to me about it. Instead of how can anyone's mind ever change if the conversation's never had?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's powerful, man. Yeah. I think that's where we end it, man. I really do.
That's a good end.
We've hit an hour and that the conversation that we just finished with that part of the topic, that was great. Colton, man, this has been a fantastic podcast. You're a great guest. So thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Like, huge honor and pleasure, and love what you guys are doing. And I might have to rip down a meta hat one of these days and check you guys out.
Absolutely.
We would love that. Yeah. Absolutely.
Shane, closing remarks.
Thanks a lot, Colton. Like Dylan said, great, great conversation. Love your vibe. Love everything that you're doing yourself. You're doing a lot of amazing things. So people like you is what keeps that conversation going and making the world a better place. So thanks for doing that.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, cuz. It was great catching up with you for a quick hour of chatting. I can't remember. I seen it on Facebook. I can't remember if it was Auntie Gail or Uncle Peter that put it up, but the acronym for Bible is Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, I seen that, I think it was like a couple months ago. I can't remember who put it up. And I'm like, holy shit, that makes so much sense. And even like what we said tonight, take the context, take God and Jesus out of it. It's literally, you should live your life this way if you want to feel fulfilled or be fulfilled.
Yeah. And here's a whole bunch of examples from 2000 years ago of how you could live your life to be happier and more fulfilled.
Exactly.
This was a great conversation. Thank you so much, Colton, man.
Yeah. Cool, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. I'll keep you on the line. I'm just going to end the recording.